As we've been saying just last Sunday morning and say again this morning, it's important that things are official, that they are certified, that they are trustworthy. It's important, for example, that you don't buy for your car unbeknown to you red diesel that's been laundered. And if you put it in your car for a while, it will wreck your diesel engine. It's important that you buy the right thing, that it's official, that it's certified. As I mentioned to you last Sunday morning, and the guy rang me up a number of weeks ago purporting to be from Microsoft. He was a fake, and if I had followed him, I'm sure he'd been looking all kinds of details off me that I shouldn't have given him, and I would have been in massive difficulty with my bank account. Fakes are out there, so we need the real thing. We've got to be careful that we get the official version. And in Mark 1 and verse 1, Mark tells us that what he tells us is indeed official, the beginning of the good news about Jesus the Messiah, the Son of God. And as we said last Sunday, those words, good news, mean official proclamation. Mark's gospel, therefore, is an official proclamation about God's rescuer, King Jesus, who rules over all. So Mark is not like the phony guy who phoned me pretending to be from Microsoft. Mark is the real thing. He's got God's message to share with us. We can trust Mark because it's official. And so as we continue our Easter series today, we're coming again to Mark's gospel. And because Mark's message is God's message, what Mark wants to say to us today is that it's official. Jesus changes hearts. Let's think about that for a second. It's official. Jesus changes hearts. I don't know about you, but I'm really relieved about that. I'm really relieved to know that there is at least a possibility that Jesus could change my heart. Are you not relieved to know that? Are you not glad you've come along to Second Tomorrow this morning? And the Bible, God's word, tells you there's at least a prospect your heart can be different. Isn't that good news? Isn't it? As official, says Mark, Jesus changes hearts. That's what Jesus does. And I've got to say, the more I know my own heart, the more I see that it needs change. As I look at my own heart throughout the day, I see all sorts of stuff that's there that shouldn't be there. I see anger there. I see greed there. I see having what other people have there. I see all that kind of stuff there. And that's not just when I'm having a bad day. That's any day. Now, if your heart's not like that this morning, I'm really glad for you. So you can just twiddle your thumbs for the next 20 minutes or so, lie back, have a sleep, whatever. But if your heart's like mine, if it's like mine, perhaps, just perhaps, God's got something to say to you today from his word, the Bible. It's official, says Mark, Jesus changes hearts. So turn with me, therefore, please, to Mark 15, verses 16 to 32, page 1022 to 1023 in the Pew Bibles. That's where you'll find it, 1022 to 1023. And here's the first thing, I think, and it really hits us between the eyes in the passage, and that is the ugliness of our hearts. And it's demonstrated so clearly in the different people we see here as Jesus approaches the cross. There's an ugliness, an unattractiveness to our hearts. We see it in two ways. One is in rebellious hearts. And when I think rebellious hearts, for sure I see it in the Roman soldiers. So for rebellious hearts, think Roman soldiers. Jesus, before he went to the cross, he faced two trials. The first trial he faced was before the Jews, his own people. The Jewish council, the Sanhedrin, tried him. And the big question the Jewish council had for Jesus was, are you God? So Jesus' divine status, was what was questioned by the Jewish court. His divine status was what was questioned. Here, by the Romans, it's not his divine status that's questioned, it's his kingly, his royal status. And so we see in these soldiers rebellious hearts, because they refuse to recognize that Jesus is God's chosen king. Instead, they mock Jesus as a joke king. Look at verses 16 to 20. The whole idea of Jesus as a king is just a big joke to these Roman soldiers. Verse 16, the soldiers led Jesus away into the palace, that is the praetorium, and called together the whole company of soldiers. They put a purple robe on him, then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him. And they began to call out to him, "Kill, King of the Jews." Again and again they struck him on the head with a staff and spat on him. Falling on their knees, they paid homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him. Whenever it says there, the whole company of soldiers was present, that's a technical term meaning one-tenth of a Roman legion. It means there were about 600 soldiers on Jesus' case that day. Get out of your mind the whole idea this was half a dozen kind of rogue Roman soldiers having their sport with Jesus. 600 Roman soldiers were on his case that day. 600 of them, just. 600 of them were mocking Jesus. And notice what they do. So Jesus is flogged, verse 15. He's flogged with a whip, and you'll have heard this before, I'm sure, a whip, and the ends of that leather whip were made out of either pieces of metal or pieces of animal bone. But the idea was that when the person's bare back was exposed to the ends of that whip, their back was left in bloody tatters. So that was Jesus' back. And then there was Jesus' head. A purple robe was put on him, on his body, mocking, as we said, the fact he claimed to be royalty. And on his head was placed a mock crown of rough thorns. And then he was mocked. The charge against Jesus was that he was the king of the Jews. We're saying the Romans' big problem with Jesus was that he claimed to be king. And they said they had no king but Caesar. So Jesus claimed to be the king of the Jews, and they mocked him for that, did these 600 soldiers. "Hail, King of the Jews," they shout. And then they fall on their knees in mock worship of this king and mock adoration of this king. And their cruel mockery is accompanied by cruel beatings. Again and again, it says, they struck him on the head with a staff and spat on him. So rebellious hearts against King Jesus are on ugly display. Rebellious hearts. As well as rebellious hearts, as Jesus gets near the cross, we see something else. We see, as well as rebellious hearts, we see bitter hearts. Now, there are acts of kindness here towards Jesus. I mean, in verse 21, Simon, we think that Simon and his family were early Christians, no one to Mark. But Simon carries his cross, but notice that he doesn't do it voluntarily. He's forced to carry it, Mark tells us. Then in verse 23, there's a further act of kindness because Jesus, in verse 23, is offered wine mixed with myrrh. It seems that it was practice at Roman crucifixions that there were kindly women there, and they doled out painkillers to those who were about to be crucified. So there are acts of kindness towards Jesus, but these acts of kindness aside, bitterness against Jesus, I think, is the main theme as he is crucified. For example, there's bitterness in the act of crucifixion. Verse 22, I mean, Mark kind of doesn't overstate things. In verse 22 simply says, "And they crucified him." Now, if you had been a local around that time, whenever you read those words, "and they crucified him," all sorts of terrible images would have gone through your mind. There was no stock way of crucifixion. So that, for example, people could be crucified through their eyes, their genitals, their hands, their feet. If you were notorious, and Jesus was seen as notorious, you would be placed on a higher cross so that more people could see you more easily and mock you more easily. And let's remember too that Golgotha, where the crucifixions happened outside of Jerusalem, was near the city wall, and that was very deliberate. It was so that people passing by on the city wall could see you and mock you from there. And Jesus, like all of those crucified, was of course crucified naked. And in verse 24, the execution squad cast lots for his clothing. In short, as well as the unimaginable physical pain, there was the utter sense of hopelessness, helplessness, and humiliation. There is great bitterness in the act of crucifixion. There's also bitterness in another way. Bitterness in the act of crucifixion, but also bitterness in the people at the crucifixion. Everyone mentioned by Mark mocks Jesus. There's the passers-by. They mock him, verses 29 and 30. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." They hurled insults at Jesus. It actually means they uttered blasphemy against God. That's what it means. And so we can say their bitterness against Jesus is actually bitterness against God. As well as the passers-by mocking Jesus, the religious leaders mock him too, verses 30 and 31. In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross that we may see and believe." It's interesting. The passers-by and the Jewish religious leaders all think that the greatest good is to save yourself, to save your own skin. That's what they think is the best outcome for Jesus. How wrong they were. For Jesus' mission was not a self-help mission. It was a help us mission. Jesus chose not to save himself so that he could save us. Jesus chose not to save himself so that on the cross he could save you. He gave his life as a ransom for many, Mark 10 and 45 tells us. And let's not also miss the fact that initially in verse 32, both of the criminals mocked Jesus too. So everywhere at the cross, we see rebellious hearts and we see bitter hearts. I want to deal with, at the very beginning of this, with an objection you might have to all of this, because maybe you say, "Kenny, do you know what? I think that's a bit hard. To talk about the ugliness of our hearts. I think that's a bit harsh. I know people who've got lovely hearts. In fact, I've got a lovely heart. I think that's a bit harsh," you might say. So let me deal with that objection just right at the beginning. When I think about a kind heart, and I've mentioned her to you before, I think about my Granny Morris. My Granny Morris had the kindest heart I ever came across. Her and my mum, I'm not quite sure. I think probably Granny Morris might have just shaded it, but it's a closer on thing. My Granny Morris had the kindest heart you could ever imagine. And I mean, so she'd have given you quite literally the bite out of her mouth. She was so kind. And I always enjoyed Sundays at Granny's and Granda's. We'd have gone to church and then come home with Granda. And Granny's and Granda's and Sunday lunch was a real treat. You had the roast and all the trimmings. Sound good? Followed by trifle. It was really special in the winter because then you followed all that up with tea and Cadbury's Dairy Milk chocolate and a big roaring open fire. It was all fantastic. And on top of all that, Granny was always slipping me a pound along with some Cadbury's chocolate. So believe me, I know very well that people have kind hearts. I know that. But as I've grown as a Christian, I have also become increasingly aware of this, that our hearts have another side to them. And that other side to our hearts is not as nice, not as attractive. And I have come to see in my own heart an ugliness. And I would put it as strongly as that. Every bit, I wouldn't water that word down at all. An ugliness. And I have come to understand that that ugliness of our hearts has a cause, a source. And the source is our sin. That's the source, that's the cause. And so if I can put it like this, that like the people at the cross, our sin has as its root cause hearts that are rebellious and hearts that are bitter against God. I am very fond of an American Presbyterian. His preaching and writing is a guy called Tim Keller. He's planted a number of new churches in New York City. He's a fantastic preacher and a fantastic writer. And Tim Keller talks quite often in his writings about our lack of self-awareness. And I think he is spot on in that. That we are not nearly as aware of our sin as we should be. We gloss over it. We paint ourselves up to be far better than we actually are. Our lack of self-awareness. He's spot on, I believe. So I wonder today, are you aware, am I aware of the ugliness of our hearts? Are we aware of that? Or do we just try and kind of beautify our hearts and think actually they're not so bad when they're not? They're ugly with sin. Are you aware and am I aware that we have rebellious and bitter hearts towards God? Or do we just kind of try and cover that up too? What's the antidote to our deep-seated problem? What's the antidote to our heart problem? Well, I think that the antidote to our heart problem can only come from somebody who's got a perfect heart and who can change the ugliness of our hearts to become like the beauty of his heart. I think that's the only way out of this. And that brings us very suitably on to the second thing, and that is the beauty of Jesus' heart. I mean, I was really encouraged as I drilled down deeper into this passage when I was preparing this talk. I was so encouraged to see that Jesus' heart is the opposite to all of these other hearts we've been talking about. Because rather than having a rebellious heart, Jesus had an obedient heart. Rather than having a bitter heart, Jesus had a sweet heart. Let me explain what I mean. So Jesus' heart is an obedient heart. We talked about how the Roman soldiers rebelled against Jesus and against God. Well, unlike the rebellious against God heart of the Roman soldiers, Jesus has an obedient to God heart. I mean, and it comes across, I think, very tellingly because twice Jesus is tempted to come off the cross. People say to Jesus twice, come off the cross and we'll believe in you. And it would have been so easy, therefore, to prove people wrong, to come off the cross and show that he, Jesus, was right and they were all wrong. But Jesus doesn't do that. Why does Jesus hang on the cross and stay there when it would have been so easy to come off the cross and prove everybody wrong? Why does he keep on the cross? Because he's obedient to his Father. Look at verse 30. Come down now from the cross and save yourself. Cry out the passers-by. And that's followed by a further come down from the cross jibe by the religious leaders. Verse 32, let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross that we may see and believe. Jesus doesn't come down. Jesus stays. Jesus hangs. Jesus dies. Why? Because his heart isn't obedient to his Father's heart. That's why. His heart's obedient. And the other way it differs from the hearts of those around him is, as well as being an obedient heart, Jesus' heart is a sweet heart. I mean, I just love how, when we said to the boys and girls earlier on, all these jibes are going to Jesus and he's been mocked and he's been hit and he doesn't retaliate once. In fact, by refusing to retaliate, Jesus shows the beautiful, utter sweetness of his heart. For one thing, even though he's been beaten for three times now, the third time in 2 days, Even though he's now been beaten for the third time in 2 days, he keeps a dignified silence. Verse 19, again and again they struck him on the head with a staff and spat on him. He is beaten for the third time in 2 days, but he doesn't retaliate. Why? Because he's got a beautiful sweetheart. And then again, very tellingly, when the passers-by heap up their bitter, mocking words on him, and the religious leaders follow that up with more mocking and bitter words, once again, verses 30 and 31, Jesus maintains a dignified silence. Why? Because Jesus' heart is a sweet heart. And if we go back to the Old Testament, we find the roots of this. And in fact, we find out how the beauty of Jesus, obedient and sweet heart, can make your heart and my heart beautiful too. Listen to this. These are wonderful words. Ezekiel chapter 36. This is God speaking. God says, I'll sprinkle clean water on you and you'll be clean. I'll cleanse you from all your impurities and all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I'll put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. Notice what God promises to do for those who trust in him. He offers, first of all, to wash our hearts clean through Jesus' death. To wash away the ugliness of our hearts, the rebellion and the bitterness against God. God says, I will sprinkle clean water on you and you will be clean. So God offers to wash away the ugliness of our hearts. And then he offers to do something even deeper than that, even more wonderful. God offers to replace our ugly hearts with a new, beautiful heart. I, says God, will give you a new heart. I wonder, do you watch any of these kind of makeover TV shows? You know, for somebody, they go into the house for, so it's a 60-minute makeover, and they go into somebody's house for 60 minutes, and they transform the whole place. So there's the kitchen before on the left and after on the right, and they make such an amazing job of it. In 60 minutes, they can do amazing things. The whole place is spruced up. You paint. New fronts in the kitchen are at least sprayed. The whole thing looks fantastic in just 60 minutes. But in 60 minutes, there's only so much you can do. So you can't put on a new extension in 60 minutes. You can't build a new conservatory in 60 minutes. You can do stuff, yes, but it's only skin deep. Folks, can I say to you today, if you will trust in Jesus, he will not give you a 60-minute makeover. He will change your life. He'll change your life if you'll give your heart to him. He'll change your life. And all the ugliness in our hearts will be washed away. I mean, wouldn't you just love to know that all the ugliness in your heart, and you can see it there if you're honest, it will be washed away by Jesus' blood on the cross. And then to know that God will do something even better, even deeper than that. That God offers to give us a new beautiful heart where our sinful heart's being replaced with a new Jesus-like beautiful heart. Folks, you ask Jesus, he'll do that for you today. If you've never asked him, never trusted in him. Ask Jesus, he'll do that for you. He'll give you a beautiful heart. So what does that look like then as we close this morning? What does it mean to live out a beautiful life out of a beautiful heart for Jesus? What's it mean if you're already a Christian today and Jesus has given you that new heart and cleaned it up and given you a heart that's brand new and beautiful? What does it look like to live that out day by day? Well, here's finally how we can live out of a changed and changing hearts. Two ways that Mark highlights how we can live out of changed and changing hearts when we know Jesus. Number one, by Jesus enabling, we can turn from wanting to rebel against God, and instead we can turn to be wanting to obey God. Instead of wanting to rebel against God and go our own way, we'll want to go God's way, and it'll be a joy to do that. It'll not be a drag, it'll be a delight. So, for example, as a young person, you'll be increasingly happy to take your stand for Jesus. You'll not be so much swayed by what your friends think is cool. You'll be far more concerned with doing what honours God. When God is in your heart, giving you that new heart and continuing to change you, you'll be far more concerned with what God thinks about your life than what your friends think. or let's say you're a working person, or you're a retired person, you'll not want to so tightly hold on to your time or your money as your own. You'll want to use your time and you'll want to use your money to honour God. It'll be a delight to do that when he is at work in your heart. The other big thing that Mark has mentioned is that by Jesus' enabling, we can turn from living out of bitter hearts to live out of sweet and beautiful hearts. That there's something really attractive about that, isn't there? About having a beautiful heart like Jesus. I think in that regard of a man who's a big hero of mine, he's dead and gone now quite a number of years ago, Dr. Craig. Dr. Craig was the minister in First Portadown Presbyterian Church for maybe 30-odd years. Some of you will have heard him preach. And Dr. Craig was such a godly man. And you know, he used to come down to Mourne and preach in the summertime. And I used to sit with my friends in one of the galleries in Mourne in the back row and muck about and not listen. So if you're sitting in the church this morning and you haven't hardly listened to a word I've said, I used to do that pretty much every Sunday. So if you're not listening this morning, I know what that's like. I didn't listen either. Just to flick through the hymn book and see who the oldest hymn writer was and all that sort of thing to get the sermon over. Such a drag. Dr. Craig used to come and take the services on Sunday and mourn over the summer. And he was such a godly man. He had such a sweet, beautiful heart. Even I was struck by it. Now, when a follower of Jesus lives their lives out of that brand new Jesus-like, sweet, beautiful heart, it really impacts others. And here's the impact that Dr. Craig's sweet, beautiful, Jesus-like heart made on me after I became a Christian. I started to invite Dr. Craig to things I was involved in. So when I was involved with the CU at Jordanstown, the Christian Union, I invited him to come along once and speak to the students there. And at that stage, Dr. Craig was a really old man. He was so old. And the students thought, why on earth has Hannah invited this man? He's done. But as they listened and saw his sweet, beautiful heart, it impacted many lives. Whatever age of a Christian you happen to be, God can use your brand new, sweet, beautiful, like Jesus heart to make a real impact for him. He can. He can. It's official. Jesus changes hearts. And through your heart, believe it or not, he can change others' hearts too. Isn't that something? Let's pray.